Chapter 25. Kip took the lift down to head out to the Blackguards' training yard, but when he got to the ground floor, he couldn't force himself to get out. He was overwhelmed with people, with having just faced down his grandfather. He was trembling. He'd figured out in his weeks coming back to the Chromeria that, with both Kip and Gavin being lost to the waves, the Red wasn't going to let the blame for it land on his own shoulders. Nor would he be deprived of the services of his favourite slave, Grinwoody. That meant whatever story he'd invented blamed Kip. Knowing he would have to answer for the crime he had tried to prevent, Kip had prepared as well as he could, charting a course whereby he might find some rapprochement with the man who'd probably accused him of murder and treason. When he got off the boat, he'd asked the first person he'd seen what had happened to Gavin. Regardless, going into that meeting should have been the prelude to imprisonment and execution. Kip still wasn't sure why it hadn't been. Part of what he'd been betting on was that Andros was a white, and he wasn't. Not anymore. Andros still wore his hood, still wore his dark spectacles, but Kip had known instantly there was something different about his voice, and he hadn't been wearing gloves. Kip's best card had suddenly disappeared. He'd planned to threaten to reveal that. If nothing else, before they took him away to prison, he could yank back Andros Giles' hood to show the man for what he was. In the chamber, Kip hadn't had a moment to think about the further implications. A man had gone white, and was now a white no longer. Impossible. Kip had merely spoken, weaving lies with a facility he didn't know he had, so befuddled and intrigued by the puzzle that he'd forgotten to be befuddled and overwhelmed by addressing the entire spectrum. And it had worked. Somehow. There had been a little spark of joy dancing at the corner of Andros Giles' mouth. Surprise, but then pleasure. Like he enjoyed playing against a worthy opponent. Maybe that was why he'd let Kip off the hook, simply so they could keep playing. Kip felt suddenly ill. He was alive because of Andros Giles' mercy? No, not that. He was alive because Andros longed for entertainment. There. That was more in line with the old horror. That made sense. But now, suddenly, the people he should most want to see, his Blackguard compatriots, he couldn't bear to see, and he couldn't have even said why. He took the lift down, and down. He got off at the level where the Prism had his private training room. Kip had lost the key Commander Ironfist gave him long ago, but the door had a superviolet panel next to it. Kip had never really noticed them before. They were flat black and only a few thumbs wide. He'd dismissed them, not realizing what they were, but he realized they were made of the same stuff as the Prism's room controls. After gathering some superviolet, Kip extended it into the panel. Ah, there was another lock inside, so that the door could be locked against superviolets as well, but it wasn't locked now. Kip pressed superviolet in, and the mundane lock popped open. He went inside. The silence was a balm. He wrapped his hands in long strips of cloth, the way Ironfist had taught him. The old widow Corrine had given him clothes, and while they weren't exactly good for exercise, Kip knew that they would be replaced soon with Blackguard garb and a Chromeria discipulus's clothes, so he set to work on the heavy bag. He started slow. 7 to 10 minutes, Ironfist said, to warm up your fists and joints to the shock of hitting. Kip bent his wrist on an errant punch. He grumbled. He'd done the wrappings wrong. But instead of untying the whole mess and trying again, he drafted a green Luxin brace around his wrist. Then he went ahead and made a full glove out of it. He matched it on the other hand. Much better. He punched the bag lightly for the 7 minutes, his fists warming the pain somehow welcome, the loss of thinking a relief. He moved over to the stretch bag, a smaller target that when hit snapped back toward you, building reflexes. After he got used to its movement, he looked beyond it, using the periphery of his vision to react. Then he went to the chin-up bar and found he could do 3 now. 3? It seemed both an impossible achievement and pathetic at the same time. 3. Then back to the heavy bag. By some accident, he turned on the lights on the bag. It lit up sections to tell him his next target, right kidney, gut, left jaw. With each punch, the bag reacted to how hard Kip hit it by blossoming in colour from his punches. Light touches lit the bag blue. Kip's hardest kicks reached up to orange. It wasn't long before he was wheezing at the effort of trying to get the bag to turn red. He braced his gloved hands on his knees. He was hitting the damned thing as hard as he could. No, he was hitting as hard as he could muscularly. Magically, he should be able to hit it harder. But he didn't want to shoot his little green bouncy balls of doom across the room. If he could add his will to his muscles with magical stuff he threw, why couldn't he add his will to his muscles? He remembered the whites in Garriston, leapfrogging from roof to roof, shooting Luxin downward as they jumped, using the back kick to extend their jumps. It was the same concept that worked for Gavin's skimmers and the sea chariots. Both of those interacted more externally. They didn't have to, did they? Kip drafted a shin guard, then kicked off his shoes. This next part was going to hurt. It always did. He began kicking the heavy bag to warm up for it. He'd been shown how to put power into kicks a dozen times, but it hadn't settled into body knowledge until today, somehow. Maybe losing some weight had helped. He swung both arms in a guard to the left, letting his body stretch, his left foot turning until it pointed backward, hips opening, then jerked his arms back in, the torsion providing power as his right leg came up and pounded the side of the bag and set it swinging. That bag weighed 2 sevens. Not bad. He repeated it, not quite as successfully, from the left. Enough warm-up. He filled himself with green Luxin, then stabbed a bit of it through the skin at the back of his right heel. He winced, cut it wider. Here goes nothing. He stood with his right foot back, twisted, snapped, and as his right foot came up, he shot green Luxin out of it. The sudden transfer of weight from his body into the air, but this time not opposing his body but aiding it, threw Kip's foot forward at tremendous speed. He kicked the bag so hard that he lost traction on his left foot and fell heavily on his side. Laughter burst out from the door. Kip popped to his feet in an instant, mortified. It was half a dozen members of his Blackguard class, led by Cruxer, who was grinning big. If it was possible, it seemed like the young inductees had changed in the weeks Kip hadn't seen them. Cruxer was bulking up, his tall, lean frame looking more muscular by the day. His eyes, though, looked 5 years older, either from the death of the girl he'd loved, Lucia, or from being in the Battle of Rue. Affable Big Leo's arms of banded iron looked even bigger. Gross Goss wasn't picking his nose, but he was itching it with a big thumb. Tiny Delos didn't look any bigger, but he was beginning to look reedy and not just skinny and small. Ben-Hadad still had spectacles with flip-down lenses, but he'd reworked them. These didn't look thrown together with string and glue. They looked a masterwork, a perfect complement to the burning, bright intelligence in his eyes. Only Fakudi looked the same, the craggy-nosed dope. Actually, that was deeply reassuring.
"Good thing Breaker fights better than he kicks, Fakudi said. "Kicking is part of fighting, though, isn't it? Ah, that's a real flesh protuberance," the kids laughed. "Shut up, you nunks," Cruxer said good-naturedly.
He led as naturally as the first place blackguard in the class should. He bowed his head to Kip.
"God Slayer."
He delivered it flat, so it could have been teasing or not. Or knowing Cruxer, he meant those who wished to take it as teasing to be able to do so. But he really meant it.
Son of a...
Kip thought that nickname had died when he nearly had on the ship.
"Crux, what are you doing here?"
"In the Prism's practice room, you mean? They got so many recruits for the war training out in the yards, we blackguards have been pushed into storage rooms and side rooms everywhere half the time. Tia somehow got us permission to use this one when the yards are full. I was going to cut her from the squad before that. She's not so good, but after she got us this place..."
"Hey,"
Tia said. Somehow she'd lifted a blue Luxin dagger from Farkudi and was now pressing the point to Crux's kidney, smiling sweetly. Cruxer grinned.
"The insubordination around here. I thought you'd think I was a traitor," Kip said.
That was it. That was why he hadn't been able to bear going down to them. These were the only people in his life who had made him feel like he belonged, and he thought they would have looked at him as an outsider, a traitor.
"Breaker, you're impulsive, but you aren't stupid. We didn't believe for a heartbeat that you'd try to kill the Red. It's ridiculous. You're trying to become a blackguard. Protecting colours is part of what we do. You wouldn't throw all that away. But if your father fell overboard, you jumping in after him without a thought? That's you completely."
Ouch. How'd you hear so fast?
Tia. Big gossip.
Hey,
Tia said. For some reason she'd been glowering at Delos. But she said nothing more. Cruxer grinned again.
Commander Ironfist thought you'd be here. Said sometimes those who've been in battle are a little reticent when they first come back.
You weren't supposed to share that last part, you oaf, Tia said. What were you doing there, Kip? With your foot?
She looked eager to talk about training. Well, she might, he supposed. She and Kip were going to talk about her being all bloody in town, but not now.
You're bleeding, Cruxer said.
Just an experiment, Kip said.
They gathered around him.
Go on,
Ben Haydad said. He'd seemed uncharacteristically nervous until now, when his eyes lit up at the possibility of a new discovery. So Kip explained, and then he kicked the bag again, showing them. When you used Luxin from one site repeatedly, the body eventually adjusted and there was little blood. But the first few times it acted like any mundane cut. A cloud of unsealed Luxin and blood both shot out of his heel like smoke out of a gun barrel, and this time he didn't lose his footing. He did nearly wrench his knee, though. The power was incredible. But the bag lit up. Red. Everyone stopped and looked at Kip.
You could, use this lots of ways, Kip said. You'd have to, figure out your own centre of weight and everything, but if you shot some from your shoulders when you ran, you'd run faster. Or when you jumped, you could shoot some from your arse. You'd be the fart flyer, Ferkudi shouted.
He reminded Kip of an excitable puppy. They laughed, but only briefly. They were all captivated by the thought of it.
I was going to say from your hips, Kip said. I mean, if you did it from your feet, you'd probably flip over and fall on your head.
But you could do it from your arse if you wanted to, Ferkudi, Tia said. Might as well have a wide platform.
They laughed again, then quieted. Big Leo turned to Cruxer.
I've never even heard of anything like this. Is it forbidden?
Cruxer shook his head.
It isn't incarnative, so I don't see why it would be. On the other hand, if you were doing it all the time, you might burn through your life in no time.
But that's true of any drafting, Tia said. Used judiciously. Think of it. We'd be faster. Stronger. Jump farther.
This can't be the first time anyone's thought of this, Kip said, suddenly embarrassed.
Every brilliant discovery is obvious after someone's made it,
Ben Haydad said.
Did you really just come up with this?
Cruxer asked.
No one suggested it to you?
Kip shrugged.
He shall be a genius of magic,
Ben Haydad said quietly, as if quoting something. The rest of them stopped, looked at him, looked at each other. Kip could tell they'd talked about it among themselves before.
Does this mean we're going to have to fill ourselves full of holes? Ferkudi asked.